We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
With Giancarlo Navas and Ryan Goins.
Welcome to the Heat Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas. And with me today, we have Mr. Lefty Leif. How are you, sir?
Very good. How are you?
I'm doing great. For the second time in the week, we have Jack Alfonso. How are you?
I'm okay.
2-1.
Kind of seeing why I don't do this that often.
I mean, like, we haven't had you on for probably 5 months, and then you come out 2 in the same week?
Yeah, I'm not conditioned for this.
You're making time. Yeah, your fitness is low, so we're going to have to get you through this. And special guests from 790 The Ticket, producer extraordinaire, Mr. Chris Cochran. How are you, sir? Welcome to the program.
I feel honored right now.
I feel really honored.
It's not about you guys. It's more the company that I have that has been on this show. Last week it was Riz, correct?
Yes, it was Riz.
It was Riz. You've had Sedano on multiple times. You've had Izzy.
Don't forget Jason Leisure. Don't forget Jason.
You've had Leisure. You've had a lot of people in the South Florida market.
Slim.
Yeah.
For the morning show. I mean,
Ethan Joy.
Yeah, exactly. You've had everybody on here, so I feel honored, but I'm kind of bummed out that Jack isn't in midseason form right now. He's out of shape.
You gotta reduce
his minutes a little bit.
I mean, last show he accused Klay Thompson of practicing Satanism, so I feel like he's in midseason form.
I feel like that's more like fatigue.
No, I don't know. He came early right out of the box with that.
Okay, all right. Are we going to do any more Satanism rituals here?
No, I think we covered it last show. I think we covered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Extensively.
If you want to check that out, you can hear our last show. Before we get into any Heat stuff, we, as Heat Beat, are taking in some new staff. We need some writers. We need anybody with graphic design experience, web design, multimedia, video editing, audio editing, any of that. So you can check out our application at heatbeatmiami.com. We have a questionnaire. It's not that long. You just email it to us. All that information is there. heatbeatmiami@gmail.com. So you just email the application to there directly and copy me gnavis103@gmail.com. So please, if you are interested in contributing to our website, we have a whole staff and we want to welcome in some more people because we are growing every year. So please check that out. Again, heatbeatmiami.com. So last game that was played was against the Sacramento Kings. And I guess I want to start with, I thought Hassan was going to kill Boogie Cousins at one point in that game. Leif, do you know the part I'm talking about where like there's an inbound and everybody's kind of setting picks to get open and Boogie's just like putting his face in Hassan's chest and Hassan's looking super annoyed. You know what I'm talking about?
For sure. Yeah. Actually, people at the game said that was happening a lot more than we saw during the broadcast. But it was progress that Hassan didn't try to tackle him, right?
I mean, the Alex Len thing comes to mind, which that probably would have ended so badly for Hassan had he done that.
Yeah, I don't know that he wants to see Boogie Cousins' hands, but...
Who wins that fight? Probably Boogie, right?
Hassan.
You think Hassan wins?
Hassan form tackled a dude like 2 years ago.
That's a valid point.
And he went after Boban.
Yeah.
Dude, I'd like to see also valid.
Boogie do that.
I think Boogie could take Hassan and Boban.
I mean, there's a lot of crazy involved in that. There's a lot of crazy. Is Boogie the crazy fighter? Like, you're kind of scared that he might kill you, but really he's doesn't know how to fight?
No, I think Boogie knows how to fight, dude.
You sure?
I don't know, dude. You don't have that growl, snarl, surly look.
It could be just the insecure face.
No, there's no way that dude doesn't know how to fight.
Leif? I don't know.
Leif?
I mean, it's possible. I mean,
he's also a basketball player. They really don't know how to fight.
I mean, so is
Udonis. I always thought Larry Johnson and Alonzo Mourning could fight, and then they like tried to throw punches, and neither of them could land.
Wait a second. No, Zoe looks like he can't fight though. Like Zoe, like I think Zoe is genuinely a nice soul.
Yeah, but he's pretty jacked. Like if you didn't see the fight, you would have thought this guy could kill someone. Like, you know, with one punch, he'll knock you out. And now, you know, we saw that. I don't know. I think it's close. Hassan's pretty big. He's pretty solid.
I think Riley's probably been in more fist fights than Zoe.
He's in scraps.
I mean, Riley had to fight his way to the NBA. You know, Zoe is just supremely talented. I mean, Riley played in the fight era.
That's true. He got his teeth knocked out and threw him on the side and kept playing.
I'm glad you brought up the teeth thing because I've been wanting to talk about this for a couple weeks because Tyler Johnson is still missing his tooth, and he says he wants to keep this look for a while. Goran obviously has had many teeth knocked out, and I'm noticing a trend that it's white guys getting their teeth knocked out, and my theory on that is they feel like they have to prove themselves a little more, so they put their face in danger. And, like, dude, if a dude loses a teeth and throws it out, like, you know that that guy means business, right? Like, you know that he's trying to be tough. Other guys don't do that.
I guess so. I mean,
it's erasing. I think
Goran and Bumpy found the loophole?
I think
like the toughest loophole.
Yeah, because they want respect. But like Udonis isn't trying to get his teeth knocked out. You crazy?
No, but he gets stitches though.
Yeah, but that's not getting your teeth knocked out. No, because when you get the tooth knocked out, there's a lot of blood involved.
So you're saying it's a hockey player type.
Exactly.
Thing.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. In hockey, these dudes get their teeth knocked out all the time. Predominantly white sport.
This is kind of how it happens when you are one of the only white boys around. And you feel like you might get jumped. If you act really, really crazy, if you come off as like the crazy white dude that might like bite your face.
That's what I think of Boogie. Like he's really crazy.
But he's not white.
But overall, just a crazy guy. But could continue with the crazy white guy.
You know, when you do the crazy white boy thing, sometimes it allows you the opportunity to not get jumped as often. So
or you get vined.
But Gianni, you might be right, man.
I don't know, dude. It's just a theory I've had. I just noticed that during the game, and I made a note of it because I wanted to talk about it. But going back to the game, so Boogie picks up six fouls in the fourth quarter, which is kind of I'd like to know. I'm sure it's happened before, but that was kind of weird, right, Jack?
That he fouled out?
He picked up six and a quarter, dude.
Yeah, because Hassan is a beast.
It's not like Hassan's going at. It's not like Hassan's D Wade. You know what I mean? Like,
what do you mean by that? I mean, he's better than D Wade.
I mean, Dwayne.
He washed.
Hashtag washed. By the way, whose 3-point percentage has been plummeting since opening night? Has anybody noticed?
It'll come back up.
Regression to the mean.
D Wade. So. I thought the six fouls was kind of. Well, I think what more interesting of that was Hassan playing with the five, and he didn't pick up one. Although he got pretty close, because it was a really physical matchup for him, right? So he's and there was a lot of 50-50 calls. But I really like how he played through the five. Spo trusted him because I think Willie Reed kind of forces him not to trust him because sometimes that's a disaster defensively. So I don't know. I really like how he played through that and how it ended up. It was kind of funny how Boogie got six and a quarter, dude.
Yeah, I've never seen a guy who has who isn't intentionally going to hack a Shaq, get six fouls that quickly. But he kind of spiraled out of control. I kind of felt like when Hassan figured out how to when Hassan worked through his frustration, DeMarcus Cousins appeared to get more frustrated that he didn't, I guess, break Hassan or crack, get him to bite on some of those plays. And, you know, he just kind of started picking up ticky-tack fouls, reaching over the top, things like that. So it was a weird thing to see happen, to see him unravel like that and not play in overtime.
Can we say that Hassan played well that night? Because he didn't have the shooting percentage that you're used to. He got the rebounds. He was in foul trouble most of the game. He was out of sorts. But, like, I thought at the end he did enough for them to win. But because I was having this argument with a friend of mine. And he was saying how bad Hassan played. And I couldn't make the argument that he played well, but I thought he played well enough.
He played well late.
I guess.
He fought through some fouls and got some and ones on it. But that was my thing. That took, like, watching him, I thought he was going to foul out. And he just never did.
But isn't that the kind of growth you want, specifically from him, to shake off 3.5 bad quarters and to put together a fourth quarter that's just enough for your team to win? Like, that's the kind of growth that people said, you know, even Dan saying, you know, how he's a bonehead and this is unprecedented. Like, so many people were saying how that's the kind of development that they didn't think they'd get from him.
Yeah, I think that's kind of maybe the cool thing about it is, it definitely wasn't a good game for Hassan, but if that's what his bad game looks like, then he's definitely worth the money. Like 14-11 with two blocks and after a crappy start, just finishing strong and getting Boogie to foul out. I mean, if that's his bad game, you can live with that.
And let's look at this season and him specifically, right? So he's putting up numbers for a team that we think is pretty okay. They blew a 19-point lead to Charlotte. They played San Antonio close. You know, they've been in every game that they've been in. Like, they've been in every game. They have not played a game this season that they're just not in. And I don't know. I think it's promising that the team's not bad. You know, it's a pretty decent team.
Do we know that for a fact, that they're not bad?
Do you think they're bad? I don't know. I mean,
I think they very well may be bad.
I think their regression is that they look pretty bad, but I think they're pretty okay. I think they're okay.
Yeah.
I think they're good enough to beat the bad teams, but they're going to lose. They're going to be pretty average against the good teams. I mean, like Charlotte and San Antonio, like those are Charlotte was home. And so I think you got to win that one, but to me, they beat Orlando convincingly. They came back against Sacramento. So, yeah, I don't know if they're terrible, if they're bad, or if they're good. I still don't know.
And they played a really good game against San Antonio, which, understandably, was playing its second night of a back-to-back without LaMarcus Aldridge. So, and without Danny Green. So, there's some qualifiers there. And, again, they're not one of the elite teams of the conference, and they might miss the playoffs. But I don't think that they're bad by any means.
They're gonna be competitive because they play hard. You know what I'm saying? Like, so they're gonna stay in a lot of games. They're gonna push good teams, but probably not win most of those games. They just don't have enough talent. I mean, there's points in the game when Goran is on the bench where they look like they don't know what they want to do. They can't get a good shot. Nobody's getting organized. I mean, that's just kind of what this roster is going to look like throughout the year. When they play bad teams, they're probably going to be able to pull out wins because they defend well. They're shooting a lot of threes, shooting a pretty good percentage. But, you know, the San Antonios, the Golden States of the world, you know, even the Clevelands, they're not going to fare necessarily so well against those teams.
But I think in relation to Hassan, it's promising that he is playing hard, right? Because the questions, I don't think, have ever been about his ability. I think we kind of realized early on that he was a good player and he was going to be good at what he's good at. He's going to be a good finisher. He's going to be good in the pick and roll, especially after he started screening better. These are all things that we knew he was good at. And now he's playing hard. He's not fishing for blocks. Like, I love the growth and the improvement and that the investment, it would appear, is going to pay itself off. Somebody.
Yeah. No, it's cool. He's good at basketball.
Wait, let's pause. I say something, and I'm throwing it to my panel. I get met with silence, and then Jack is like, yeah, that's cool.
It's a great thing that he's good at basketball.
I hate you, dude.
It would be pretty bad if he wasn't good at basketball.
You know what? We're right. You're not in midseason form. I take it back.
Okay, fine. I will fix it. I guess, yeah, we won't be silent.
Oh, you too, Cochran.
Okay,
Leisure wouldn't do this to me.
You don't like the awkward pauses?
No, I want to keep the show moving.
That is the show.
That is, I mean, for me, the season, I think Hassan, for me to, like, I guess, feel optimistic is Hassan has to play well, which he has. You have to see growth out of Bumpy, and you have to see growth out of Justice. We don't know Josh yet because he is not back yet. But those are the only guys I care about on this team are those three, four guys. The rest, Goran, he's there. He's good. You know what you're going to get from him. But Babbitt, we don't know if he's not going to be back next year. Derek Williams, Deion Waiters, Willie Reed, you like what you see from him. So those, I only care about like three or four guys on this team.
Magruder. What do you mean? Are Jack and I the only ones high on Magruder?
I like Magruder. We just don't know enough about him. Like, he hasn't shown enough to prove that we should, like, invest in him emotionally or
42% financially. Shooter.
I mean, I think he's shown more that we would have, we have more reason to be optimistic about his future than to be pessimistic about it. I mean, he's played well. He's got in and been able to contribute minutes right off the bat at the beginning of the season. I don't think anybody necessarily expected that.
To
me, it's four games. I mean, it's tough to know anything about any of these guys after four games. You know, this is a small sample size kind of deal.
He's 3 for 7 from three. So that's as small as a sample as you could.
What's Goran from three?
Goran is actually a lot better this year, and I'm glad you brought that up. So Goran is, I have the wrong year pulled up. I believe he's like 48% or something, 52% from three this year.
That's sustainable.
Yeah, totally sustainable. But the interesting thing about him is his shot distribution, right? So, like, I'm thinking, why is Goran shooting better? And it's kind of weird because, to me, it would appear that he's getting a lot of the same shots, which he kind of is. So, by percentage, his catch and shoot versus pull, because he has the ball in his hands a lot. And I don't – he has not really been a great – guy to pull up, you know, like a pull-up shooter. Last season he was in the 30s and low 30s. This season he's 33%. That really good year in Phoenix he had, he was closer to 40%, but in a Heat uniform he has not been good off the dribble shooting. So he's shooting a lot of catch and shoots, which he did last year as well because he was off the ball when Dwayne had it. And I'm not getting why he's a better shooter this year, and he's getting essentially the same shots.
He's a weird case because he has a weird shot chart when you look at it, because he shoots significantly better historically from the top of the arc than he does from the corners or the sides. So I can't really get a gauge on him whether he's like a good shooter or an average shooter or like a mediocre shooter. So sample size.
Sample size, and it's really early. But I mean, I'm going to let the audience in on a trick. This is the secret of the beginning of basketball season. You just run with the Atlantis storyline that the numbers give you because it's a small sample and you can do it now. You can't do it later. Pro tip. This season, Goran has had quite a bit of open shots. Most of his shots have been open. Three of his 10 attempts have been open 4 to 6 feet. He's missing some of those too. So he's 3 of 10, 4 to 6, like a defender 4 to 6 feet away, and 6+ feet away, he's 4 of 4. But a lot of them are coming with a guy 2 feet away from him. He's taken half his shots from there. So again, it's a mix of open and not open. So I don't, like Jack saying, he's kind of weird in that regard.
What? I'm sorry, I fell asleep for a second. Those numbers.
See, this is why it's nice to have Alf. And Leif, this is your job when Alf's not here. You need to make fun of me when I bring in stats.
Well, I mean, but okay. I shall do so going forward.
So I want to get into some Luke Babbitt talk. And by Luke Babbitt talk, I mean how he had the ultra green light last game. Cochran, do you know what I'm talking about, right? There was a stretch where he shot like six straight shots.
The one where I call those stretches like I just need one to go in.
Dude,
he's like, you just say to yourself, I just need one or two to go in, and I'm rolling, coach. I'm rolling. You can't take me out once I get going.
He was Kobe-esque.
If he doesn't make threes, he can't play. So he has to shoot it as many times as possible because he's absolutely
horrendous.
He's not. What else is he contributing? I mean, he doesn't necessarily play defense so well. He doesn't do the little things. He's just a shooter, so he's got to continue to shoot. I don't know what else to say about him.
But you know the stretch I'm talking about where, like, he's just wide open and he's taking every shot. And I'm wondering, like, is coaching staff, like, are they cool with this?
Spo said today, I want him to get 10 attempts next game. He has the green light. So, I mean, obviously they are. He's kind of going about it in a little bit of an Antoine Walker way. But that's what they want him to do. That's his role.
Put him up.
If you're not contributing anything else to the team, you have to do that. You have to just let it fly. And if you hit 40%, you know, out of 10, you'll take that every time.
The starting lineup has far and away played the most minutes on the team, and they're far and away the best in terms of net rating. So they're outscoring opponents 31 points per 100 possessions with the starters. Their defense is really good. They're yielding 85 points per 100 possessions, and their offense is putting up 116 points per 100 possessions. So they're really good with the starters. Babbitt, Gorin, Dion, Hassan, and Justice.
Alpha's going to hate this podcast so much. He's just going to curse.
Honestly, I think we need more Dion. He played 42 minutes in the Kings game. I think we could have pushed that up to 48. Really need his activity.
He's very active.
His activity, man.
It's commendable. He doesn't always know what he's doing, but he's trying something.
You just want him to look busy.
Yeah. He's working hard.
Just look. So he's the guy that, I guess, when you're at work and when you see your boss walk by, just look busy. Just look like you're doing something. Try to fit in a little bit. It might not work, but hey.
His layups get blocked by the rim a lot.
Why is he so bad at layups?
It's weird.
I feel like he doesn't decide what he's like gonna do until like it's already too late. He's like if you gave Justice Winslow a lobotomy. Just like he tries really hard, but I don't think he knows what's going on the court.
Dion is 8 for 24 inside 5 feet. How is that? He gets there so off. He's so good at getting there. Why is he so bad at finishing?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Cochran.
He's not good.
Don't slander Dion. It's D Wade Jr.
I mean, I'm watching him play, and I'm just like, okay, so he had a decent game, but he's gonna have games like that throughout the year. But he's just so frustrating to watch, and it's not even like an entertaining frustrating. It is just, what are you doing, Dion? What are you doing?
I think it's an entertaining frustrating. You disagree? I think it's fun.
No, it drives me nuts. Those kind of players, man, drive me up a wall.
It's fun in a year when you don't expect to win anything. But if we were, you know, if we were trying to go and win any semblance of...
If this was last year,
your head would explode.
Oh, my God. I would be so mad at him.
Because you feel like the stakes are a little bit higher. And, you know, in the preseason, Deion Waiters was a facilitator. He was getting assists and distributing the ball. And I kind of thought that was going to be the new version of Deion that... This is what I thought, y'all. The Heat culture was going to just imprint upon him this amazing new way of playing, and it hasn't necessarily happened that way.
It can only go so far, and I think Deion's immune to it. He reminds me, just like Ricky Davis.
He does have a little bit of Ricky in him.
Ricky Davis, like, it would not shock me if he's on the verge of a triple-double. He tries to miss a layup on his own rim to get the rebound.
I will say this about Deion's passing. The guys he's giving the ball to are getting good shots. Like Tyler Johnson is shooting 60% off passes from Deion. Hassan Whiteside, 60%. Gorin, 80%. The only not good one is Luke Babbitt, and he's 2 of 9. And I'm sure that they were all open threes.
He's got a great first step, and you know, like he can, like you said, he could get to the basket. He just can't finish it. So it's almost like you wish he would pass it all the time and just keep getting these other guys high percentage shots, because 8 for 24 within 5 feet is no bueno.
But he's an enigma, right? Because he has the talent to do it, and he does things that are just, why is your brain wired that way? Like those two shots at the end of the game, even the one he made. Oh my God, Tristan Thompson just yammed on some white guy on the Celtics. Did he really get that Chloe tattoo? Was that real?
No. I think that was fake.
I hope so, because I would feel bad for that man.
He's in love.
No, dude, you don't do that.
In love.
No, I don't care how in love you are. You don't get it. How long is they? What? Like, it's no.
I mean, I what's your love with a Kardashian? You know,
no.
It takes your life to the next step.
Is it true that LeBron was mad at that? Because like I saw those Twitter rumors, but I wasn't sure how like true that was.
I don't think any of it's that true.
I wanted it to be true. So you didn't want it to be true.
You seem baffled by the fact that like. They're together.
Yeah.
I want to know why. Is it that she's human and not drawn?
No.
What?
Listen, 3D girls are overrated, okay? Waifus are what's up. No, I don't know. It's just...
Is it because she's a Kardashian?
Yeah, it's because she's a Kardashian, and there's like a stigma, and like I don't want to stigmatize them, but I'm saying...
Kim dated Chris Humphries.
I mean, we've seen this happen before.
Yeah, she dated Chris Humphries. Kim dated Chris Humphries, Miles Austin. I feel like this is actually in line. Chloe's actually done better.
She dated
Lamar Odom.
Kim dated Miles Austin?
Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, I feel like Chloe stepped her game up a little bit in the dating.
I can't believe we're talking about this. What the hell are we doing?
I don't know. Have any of them dated a Hall of Famer?
No.
But
Lamar Odom is a Hall of Famer in my
heart. Maybe in the Rap Hall of Fame.
That's even questionable. But ooh, that's
Leif, that's a hot take. Leif, that's a hot take, dude.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a huge Kanye guy.
I read this really funny tweet that I felt bad that I laughed at, and it said Chloe has more Eastern Conference Finals experience than Chris Paul. All right, Western Conference Finals. It was so. I was like, "Oh, I cannot believe I laughed at that, dude!" Like, it was worth the chuckle.
I giggled.
It was funny. Why are we talking about Tristan Thompson?
You saw him dunk. You saw him dunk on a white guy.
Like, how did we get? Yeah, I was like, "How did we arrive here?" I was like, "Why are we talking about? You know, which Kardashian's done better?"
It's the stuff that people want to hear about, though. I mean,
and you felt it very necessary to specify he dunked on a white dude. Gianni, you're always playing the race card. You do that Dan thing so much.
Is it
with
a
this
Dan
race
thing? Because I didn't know how to describe, because I would have said who it was, but I just saw him dunk on somebody and he was a white dude, and I figured, you know, that'll narrow it down.
I mean, but you did bring race up earlier.
I did, yeah. Yes. Well, because am I right about the tooth thing or what? Tell me I'm wrong.
I don't know anymore.
Tell me I'm wrong, dude. Somebody tell me.
You're probably wrong.
Dude, every time I look at the screen, it's frozen. It's just Leif laughing. I just can't stop laughing.
I don't know what to tell you.
It looks like you're enjoying yourself. So, like, when I look over, it looks like, you know, we're all having fun, when in reality,
well, yeah,
it's a disaster.
For sure.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, this is absolutely a disaster, but it's still fun.
But by the picture, it looks like you're having a lot of fun.
I can't even see him. It's just loading still.
You can't? Leif is still loading for you.
He's just constantly loading. Well, I've been staring at this thing for like the past 2 minutes.
Sorry about your bad luck, man.
you're really missing out here. Oh my God.
So Russell Westbrook's going to drop like 60 on Golden State tonight, right? That's what's going to happen?
No. I hope so. No, I want the revenge tour, like, full effect.
I want a nasty dunk on Durant.
I want Durant to dunk on Russ, and then Draymond Green to kick Russ.
Why is this?
I don't know. Everybody wants Westbrook to get revenge.
Yeah.
And I'd kind of like to see everybody be disappointed. We had too much feel good with the Cubs win.
You've been in a rough mood lately, man.
Yeah, it's very grumpy. You're being grumpy. Negative, Jack.
I'm sorry.
Are you grumpy? Are you okay?
What's wrong, dude? Hey, let's talk about this.
I don't know. Justice Winslow.
Everything okay?
9 points the other night.
I mean, that's what it's going to be like, man. It's going to be slow development.
I'm the one who they say takes all this stuff too seriously, man. Yeah, lighten up. It's all
one,
good.
It's just 1 9-point game. He had 18 the night before.
Thanks. Thanks for cheering me up.
Well, see, you know, now that you brought up Justice, somebody was making the comparison, would you be happy if he's Iguodala? And I could totally see him kind of taking that career parabola. I'm sorry, I just turned to my screen and I saw Leif laughing again. It's really funny. I think that's a doable career path, the Iguodala, right?
Yeah. No, I've been saying this since last year.
For what team, though?
Looks a lot like Iguodala. For just his skill set, not a great shooter, at least. Iguodala ended up becoming a decent shooter. Good, like, very good passer, elite defender, very athletic, does a lot of things. Not necessarily a superstar, but kind of gives you everything. Super
very
valuable
good player, Olympian.
The thing with that is I mean, that's a good comparison, and for him, that's great. But when I see these comparisons, like, are you saying he could be Andre Iguodala and stay with the Heat, or is he going to be Andre Iguodala on another team?
I think he'll just never have the responsibility on offense that Iguodala had early in his year in Philadelphia, like after Iverson left, that when, you know, they were like
Thaddeus Young.
Yeah, the eighth-seeded Sixers.
I like the comparisons, but I always look at it like, how does this impact the Heat? Is he going to finish with the Heat as that guy? And maybe you could help me, like, look at it. Maybe I'm looking at it wrong.
Well, it depends. What Iguodala are we talking about? Are we talking about the prime Iguodala from Philadelphia, like that deal?
Like
the six man hold it together glue guy Shane Battier of a championship team, like.
Well, he was more than Shane Battier. To be fair, he was a Finals MVP.
Yeah, he shut down LeBron.
Also, I think, like, it doesn't necessarily say anything about what Justice is going to be in terms of quality. I just think his skill set is very similar to what Iguodala's was, and I could see that development happening for him. I don't know if he's going to be like exactly like Iguodala, or better or worse, but I just think that's the type of player we'll
see. So we need to continue to talk about Justice Winslow, because Jack just like actually gave us good content.
Energy, opinions. Look at that, Jack. See, like, Iguodala is having, you know, after a certain point, the usage, you know, started going down to like the teens, you know, 17, 16, 13, like something like that for Justice, I think is a nice sweet spot where he's handling the ball enough, but he's not, you know, captaining an offense.
You're going to need to pair him up with another star, though.
Of course.
Is what they have, which is Josh Richardson, Eddie Jones, basically.
Boom.
I
like him a lot.
If you pair him with like young Dwayne Wade, that'd be really nice.
Shooting in that lineup.
I don't even know what you guys are talking about, but we need to draft Dennis Smith.
Who is that?
Just go YouTube him.
Does Dennis Smith shoot?
He does everything. He's nasty, man. I think he's gonna play at NC State 1 year.
I guess their need going into next season, I don't know if they'll draft it or they'll try to find it in free agency, is they need power forwards because that rotation's terrible.
I also think they need a point guard, probably, right? Like, I love Goron, but...
Yeah, isn't that what they paid?
Nobody thinks he's the future of the team.
Isn't the pimple face the future? Isn't that what this is for? Isn't that what all that money's for, the point guard of the future?
You get really mad when you think about Tyler.
I thought they just signed one, you know, for a lot of money.
One thing I've noticed is you guys all have your trigger points. It's just something will each set you off. Like,
anybody want to say something bad about Riley so we can get Leif involved?
I mean, what's more to say? He gave Chris Bosh blood clots.
You know, let me go to Coachy Ramos's Twitter account and start reading it so that Jack Leif can get triggered. The you see, you're bad teammates because you're supposed to laugh even if you didn't think that was funny, so we can move the show along.
Did you tell a joke?
Yes, I did tell a joke.
I thought you were just segueing.
No, yeah. I mean, I can do that if we want, but I'm not promising it's going to be entertaining.
I think I've been a lot more objective lately about the Miami.
Yeah, you've been better, Leif. You've been better.
I've probably been worse.
Winslow is a Swiss Army knife. Miami relegated to only clipping nails last season.
What?
It's downright unlikely Winslow ends up a superstar. The first season was historically bad offensively.
Are you reading something?
I'm reading Coachy Ramos' Twitter account.
Oh, okay. That just...
Yeah.
Now we have really gone into the doldrums.
Is that just what this podcast is now?
I'm trying to trigger him.
Yo. Look me in my face,
dog. Those are some good takes, man. Those are some good takes.
I'm into this now. This is why he's writing for my new website. If you don't know, I'm quitting Miami Heat Beat, starting Assets and Titles. read us. We're really good. We don't play results. Fair and balanced stuff.
There's a pay homage to Hinkie tweet here. Because, you know, Leif, Hinkie's a better general manager than Pat Riley.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Of course.
I like that process, though.
I love that Embiid's nickname is The Process. That's a pretty badass nickname.
They're all in on the troll.
Yeah, dude, that's so funny.
Poor Hinkie, though.
There's some people that live and die by that stuff. I mean, Coachy and Dutch are two examples of them.
And Jack. Assets and
I think there's just a fine line between it, with the tanking and the process versus being competitive. Because it's been proven that, like, if you tank, it works out for you in the NBA over the NFL.
But when does it really work? What team can we point to that you know that they deliberately tanked, that then they actually became good and won anything?
Well, I remember when the Celtics, they were tanking when they had Doc Rivers, and this is before they got Garnett. They decided to just let it go.
But then they ultimately just pushed all those chips to the table and got.
Yeah, which is part of the tanking
process.
Thing.
Yeah, it's part
of the process. But I don't think you can continually do it though. That's the thing. Like I'm okay with it like 1 year. But outside of that, like you can't keep going. You can't keep doing it where it's like 3 or 4 years.
I thought the whole point of the process was that you acquire these players that are young on small money because they're going to be value compared to their contribution. So you just continue to stack those chips as much as you can. Is that not what the process is? Do I not understand? That's part of the process.
There's a lot to the process.
It's layered, Leif. It's layered.
It's very. It's just not taken.
It's multi-pronged. Layered. It's multi-pronged.
Yeah.
I question Riley's process now. Like I don't know how with the whole Dwayne thing. I don't know if it's been affected. Like I don't know if it's
it's
going to work out.
I was making that argument when it happened. How. I don't know, and I guess Leif kind of talked me out of this thinking, but I was.
Well, I've talked to Ethan about it because, you know, it's great when you have Dwayne, but when it ends bad,
is his hurt reputation going to make it difficult for them to get a star?
I don't think stars are going to want to come here right now. Regardless, we're not a very good team right now. If Justice Winslow develops to the point, or Josh Richardson for that matter, or Tyler Johnson develop to the point where they're good enough that stars want to come play with them, then it won't be an issue. Pat Riley's not, I don't think, is really super relevant to the future of this team in terms of attracting stars as much as Justice and Josh are.
I mean, if you're asking me if Chris Paul and Ben Simmons and Eric Bledsoe are going to want to come play in Miami, probably not. But I don't think that there's like this widespread thing about Riley throughout the league where you're going to see decades and decades go by where everyone avoids the franchise like a plague. I think that that's wishful thinking on a lot of people's part that are not fans of Riley, but you know, like, also in terms of the vision long term, I think it's really more about Coach Spo. And you can't deny that players want to play for Spo, and they come to Miami to some degree because of the way that he tends to maximize talent. I mean, am I off base there?
Derek Williams said that. That's why he came down to Miami, was Spo.
And now he hasn't played yet.
What's the process, Derek Williams?
That's because the Heat, they're just awful people, and they treat other players so badly. You know, that's what they tell me all the time.
They bamboozle people.
Yeah, exactly. It's just they're classless.
How bad does Derek Williams have to be that he can't break this awful power forward rotation?
He's pretty terrible.
Yeah.
He's been a disaster.
He's Derek Williams. He's not good.
Yeah, he's not a good guy. He's not a good basketball. He's probably a very nice person in real life that got robbed by escorts or strippers in New York.
Did that happen? Oh, that did happen. Yes, you're absolutely right.
He's not too smart either. I bet that Spo was like, yeah, he probably found out about that story. He was like, yeah, we can't start you.
I'm sorry. This guy's a starting job, Derek. I've changed, coach. Yeah. I've changed.
We did our homework. We actually just did our homework, and we've decided you're not going to start, man.
Speaking of Spo, there have been some questionable things happening at the end of games, and I think part of it is Deion just being Deion, and I cannot for the life of me understand why down the stretch they look so confused. I don't get
it. They're young, and they don't know how to play together.
Hold on, wait a second. Goran doesn't know to wait for a high pick. Because that's their best offense? Like, what? I don't understand. What am I missing?
They don't have the vets, the savvy vets.
Yeah.
I mean, there's Jack, and I'm being serious. Like, what is there? Like, there was a point in that game where Gorn's dribbling on the side of the court trying to, like, do 50 crossovers to try to get to the rim. And I'm like, what are you doing?
It's a culture thing. The culture is not strong enough.
They don't have enough high IQ guys. They don't have enough high IQ basketball players.
This is what happens. Like, truthfully, if you want a straight answer, at the end of games, it's a half-court game. It's not a full-court game. And that's when guys like Dwayne Wade were valuable because you could just give them the ball, get out of the way, and they would kind of, you know, be methodical about the way they approached those late-game situations. Goran doesn't do that. He wants to dribble around in circles and look for you know, like angles to the basket or cutters. Exactly. So it's like he's not really that guy that you just throw it to and everybody gets out of the way and he directs traffic at the end of games when it's a half court style.
Deion thinks he's that.
Correct. Deion's got a little bit more of that in him. It's just he is not necessarily going to finish at the same rate as Dwayne did.
Deion's capable of making difficult shots, I guess, is the thing with him, right? Like, he can take a bad shot and he has a better chance of it dropping than other guys because he can get it whenever he wants.
He may just take more of them than
that's also true. So that does skew the math, but I still don't get why at the end of the game they don't run high pick and roll, because that seems to be where they're most successful with the shooter weak side, and that was not happening. It was Goran dribbling around in circles, like Leif was saying, looking for a cutter, or it was Deion, you know, doing what Deion does.
My head exploded on that play. Like,
which one? Because both of them were awful.
I was just like, that's what happened out of a time. Like, that's what happened.
But that's clearly broken play, right? Like, that's not, like, Spo's not drawing that up. Or unless
I refuse to think he's drawing.
He's a master tanker, and then in which case
Deion probably waved off the play when they came out of the timeout. He said, "Screw that, throw me the ball, get out of the way."
I'm Deion Bates, damn it!
This is what it is. Deion is coming to those guys, and he's saying, "I knew LeBron was leaving here before any of y'all did, including Riley. I was told before all y'all, so you better respect me and get out of the way so I can take fadeaway jumpers late in the shot clock, and Alf can drink because of it."
Oh, my God.
I have a theory about this, actually.
I like
it's
these
the
theories.
Whole Deion conspiracy.
What's the Deion conspiracy?
Well, Pat Riley, Eric Spoelstra, the Miami Heat organization, they would never admit to wanting to tank. Their culture is too good for that. They're all about culture. But if they sign Deion and play him just enough where they lose a lot of close games, they'll still get a high pick. But it'll look like they're trying.
I like that.
I'm so woke.
And I've said from the summertime that this roster is built specifically so they could play as hard as possible and still only win about 36 games. And I mean, that's really what it's about. I mean, it's just not a when we did our prediction article, I said 40. I think I said 44 because I was really excited.
You have the guts, Leif, because you have the guts.
No, because Alf went 48, so I'm not, you know.
Dude, Alf's a psycho.
48 is wow. High.
But, you know, upon reflection, I think around 36 is more what this team is.
So you think it's going to be like a bait? You think it's like a bait and switch type thing? It's we'll get you into the game, but we'll really show you. This is the result you'll get.
Yeah, but then they have to play Derek Williams more if they're committed to this. Or is that making it too
obvious? I don't know. Maybe he's good, actually.
Wait till the injury bug hits. Oh, I mean, like, God.
Hassan.
You got starters out, and then you got to, you know, go deep into that really weird bench.
Weird's a nice way to put it.
Where Yankovic comes back, like just makes the call.
Well, imagine if Miami loses Justice Winslow at any point in the season. And then not only do you have a hole at power forward, you have a giant hole at small forward. Because your best small forward is Justice Winslow. Your best power forward is Justice Winslow. And then who's your next best small forward?
James Johnson.
I know what they should do. They should trade their 2017 first rounder for Rudy Gay. Trade their first round pick for Rudy Gay because then they'll win more games. So I think that that's the best plan. What do you guys think?
I think trading Gorin for Gay is good because then you start the tankathon.
Sorry.
I don't know. I think you got to keep it the way it is. I saw Rudy. He looked decent on that. He looked pretty good.
That was his tryout, dude.
That was a tryout for next year?
That was his heat tryout. He was like, hey, Riley, look at me. No?
Cool.
I just wanted to let that awkward silence sit.
It's better because we could see you. We could see you just sit in your chair and spin.
I hate you guys. I could be watching anime, having fun, not dealing with youth. I'm going to be in my trailer.
Johnny, can I ask you something real quick?
Yes, sir.
You said a word earlier, and I've been thinking about it for the past, how long have we been doing this?
40.
Probably 20 minutes.
We've been
45. Can you say the word homage again?
Homage?
Okay. The way you said it earlier, you were stressing that H.
Homage.
I just thought it was interesting.
There, that was strong.
Like, yeah.
Hummus.
Homage.
That's even stronger.
I remember.
Homage.
I think the second time I ever went to New York, my friend took me to a Mediterranean restaurant, and when the waiter said hummus, I knew I was in somewhere very authentic, and I was in for a great meal, which I was, by the way.
Can you spell homage?
Homage?
He's Googling. It's
no,
over.
I'm writing That's it. My, I'm writing now. It in my spell check. H-O-M-A-G-E. Homage.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
I misspelled Anthony Chang's name today. That was bad.
He corrected you, too.
Why am I bad at spelling? Like, is this... Because I feel like... I thought everybody was bad at spelling, and Twitter made me realize that only I'm bad at spelling.
Well, I thought that was autocorrect.
No, I just can't spell. I have autocorrect off.
Oh. Maybe you can't type. Maybe it's typing. It's a hand-eye coordination thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of... I refuse to think that you're bad at spelling.
Can
I
you
just
play sports?
I can play sports, yes. I'm actually sneaky.
Like, can you get a baseball?
I cannot do baseball.
Volleyball.
I'm a volleyball player. I play basketball. So, I'm a pretty decent basketball player. I'm a good soccer player.
So you like to play... Never mind.
Say it. Let's go.
It appears as if you play sports that have bigger balls compared to smaller ones.
I play tennis.
Okay, that's a smaller ball.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just thinking if the hand-eye coordination could have something to do with the way you type.
Oh, I'm clumsy. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm a clumsy person, but I'm not bad at sports. I kind of am Deion Waiters in sports because, like, I'm only okay, but... I try to do, like, wild highlight. I live for the highlight. Like, when I play sports, I live for the highlight. I'm always trying to make a highlight, even though I know it's stupid. So, like, in basketball, I'm going to try to cross you up and shoot a fadeaway, even though I know it's stupid. But I live for the highlight.
I can't.
You can cross over. You can do a crossover dribble?
Of course not. It's slow. I'm fat, so it's slow. I mean,
I'm fat too, but I can do a crossover dribble.
It's a really slow crossover, but it's a crossover. I mean, I won't lose the handle. Does this surprise you that I can play sports?
Maybe a little bit.
I have to see it to believe it.
I can like legitimately play volleyball though, and I can legitimately play
soccer. I saw some of those Heat Twitter Classic basketball games, and it was not pretty to watch.
No, it wasn't.
Wait, what is that? I've heard of that, and what is that?
I've only been to one of them, mainly because they like to play them at 11 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday or Sunday when it's hot as balls outside, and I just don't want to die of a heart attack.
Awful idea.
Yeah, exactly. But it's basically just pickup games that they've gone to Miami Lakes. I don't know what school it is. They've got. Basically just play pickup basketball. And
who from Heat Twitter goes?
All the old heads.
When I went, that's another discussion I want to get into. I want to get into the new era and old era of Heat
Twitter. They all hate me, I think, man. I think all of the old Heat Twitter heads.
I think of you as old Heat Twitter. Like, there's a, like, I think
I,
of...
I thought so, too, but I don't know. I don't get that feeling.
I think of... So if my old Heat Twitter would be Slim, Dan Gnarly, Alf, Benjamin, I don't know... Yeah, exactly. These people. And so, like,
Bill.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we're all in line on who we think.
We know the era. Yeah, the OGs.
And so then I'll just see random people pop up that, like, claim Heat Twitter. I'm like, what is this? I can't identify with this.
Like me.
No, you'll know. And this is the thing that drives me nuts about it, is because it's the new ones, like the young kids on the block.
Mike Scriba?
He's one of them. There's a bunch of them.
When do you guys think he became a fan? Like 2010, like around July?
Hey, calm down about my boy Scriba. Shout out to Scriba.
I love Scriba, dude. Like I know, like, we poke fun at him. I think he's cool. No, I think he likes the team legitimately.
I do like thinking about the divide between the old era.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating stuff. It really is. I wish there was a paper written on it.
Jack, you're new Heat Twitter, right?
Here's what I think I am. I think I'm pre new Heat Twitter, but post old Heat Twitter.
Yeah, you're like the Middle Ages.
Yeah.
That's kind of the lane I thought I was in too, buddy.
I think that's what most of Heat Beat is.
Yeah, you're middle aged Heat Twitter. Yeah.
You guys were all before me though. I came in toward the end. Like, we started the podcast, and that's when I really started to use Twitter around 2012. The first Pacer series, or the first good Pacer series, I think it was, or the second title. I think we started the second title. That's when Brian and I started Heatbeat, and that's when I started Twitter, when I had like 10 followers.
So you guys are bandwagon fans. That's
Is this a bandwagon website?
This is so bandwagon. See, man. We're gonna cover the hell out of these 36 wins, dude.
We are doing our most intensive work in a down season. So
we're looters in a riot.
Cochran, do you know the story on how I became a sports fan?
No, please tell me. I'm sure I've seen it across my timeline.
I started taking. I mean, I'd always watched the Heat, and I remember because my uncle is a big Heat fan. When he used to live in my house, I would watch all the games with him. But I took a liking to basketball on my own, but I never watched it religiously. I mean, if it was on, I watched it. So, like, it wasn't until the 2009 season, when I started taking AP classes in my high school, was a whole new group of people that I had never met before. And I'm thinking, oh man, I got to make friends now. So I pretended to love the Heat.
God damn you.
They all liked the Heat.
So you faked it till you made it.
I faked it, and I think it was like 5 games in, and I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. I think the Heat started off 4-0 that year, 3-0, and then they lost to Phoenix. And I was like, oh my God, we were undefeated. And at that point, I was like, wait, why do I care so much? Yeah, so.
Very convenient.
What year was this?
This was 2009. 2009, the MV3 year.
Very convenient timing.
No, because. Hold on, wait. No. I did watch the 15-win season. I did.
Okay.
And I remember being very happy a win at Golden State because they lost a lot. I think that was one of like winning a whole month or something.
This is fascinating to see you. Like, you look like you're tracing back childhood memories.
I am.
Are you crying?
Yeah,
a little bit. And remember, I come from a life of waifus and esports. You know what I mean? Like, that was my life before sports. Mean.
I became because of Zoe. I saw the last name morning on a jersey when I was probably like 8 or 9. I'm 28.
You old.
And so I saw morning and I was like, that's a pretty cool last name. And I just never knew what it meant. That I really, I saw morning, and then I got a jersey, and then I just started watching them. And next, you know, I did the Dan Marley, Vashawn Leonard, and Mashburn era, and it just kept going from there.
Leif, did you watch the first game?
That's not an old joke.
They've only been around 28 years. How old are you?
What?
I'm
34. I started watching in 1990. My uncle took me to a game, and I just became a fan. I don't know. That's when I found sports, when I was about 8 years old. So
my first game was like in 2009. So like I went forever without going to a basketball game. I saw a Houston Rockets Heat game.
They played the Milwaukee Bucks, and they had like I don't even know, like Jack Sigma or something like that. part of my French.
My first game was it was against the Mavs. It was one of the Jazz or Mavs games with Shaq.
That was also you went a while without going to a game.
My parents never went. My parents never took me. They were more Dolphin fans. But then as I got a car.
Nobody watched football in my house. My house was a soccer house because my father's Colombian and my mother's Italian. So soccer was the only thing that was watched here. Occasionally my uncle would put basketball on, but the Dolphins were something I learned to be miserable about on my own.
First football game I ever went to was the AFC Championship against the Buffalo Bills, and we got our ass kicked, and it's been that way ever since, actually.
one of my favorite stats is that the Dolphins did not win a playoff game in Dwayne Wade's entire career here. That's amazing.
It was his fault.
I mean, that guy's ruined everything. Think of everything Miami's done in that span. They've went to five finals. They've been to countless conference finals, 3 titles, and the Dolphins couldn't win a single playoff game.
One World Series, and in that run, the Marlins have won one, right?
Yeah, 2003.
The Panthers did the Panthers make a Stanley Cup in that run too?
Well, no,
they made 96. They made 96
against the Avalanche.
Maybe the Canes. They beat Nebraska, but I don't know if that was too early.
Is this still a Kane City? Early. Like people keep like trying to tell me that this is a Kane City, and
if they start winning, it will be. Football is one of those sports where football will be the most popular sport in South Florida if the teams are good.
It'll eat you alive. It'll eat you alive.
But if it's like how it's been, then the Heat and the other teams that, you know, even the Panthers, and I'm not a hockey guy at all, but, you know, they.
I'll take you behind the curtain a little bit at work. Since the Dolphins are on a 2-game winning streak, it's basically 3-4 right now. And in the Heat, we don't really know what the Heat are. Our boss pulled us in and he's like, all right, guys, since the Heat are rolling right now, we can't go full Heat. We gotta ride this out and let this go because we don't want to. Because the listeners, what they do is once it gets football, they start like it just starts eating their minds up. Like Leif said, like it'll just become full football.
I think that's largely a demographic thing because I think millennials in this town specifically are basketball before anything because the team has been good. The Dolphins haven't been good in that whole time, and the Heat have. And I think something that also plays into fact is in Miami, a lot of millennials like myself are from immigrant parents that did not grow up with American football. So that's not something that was like taught in their house. Because I know a lot of people like me that, I mean, your dad from Colombia or Venezuela is not coming to this country and watching football. I mean, sometimes it happens, but I think a lot of times that's not something that they watch. So the team that was good down here was the basketball team. So you millennials growing up grew up with the Heat more so than the Dolphins, because when you're young, you gravitate to winning.
And Gianni, just say you hate the NFL, man. Get it out.
I don't
just
hate say the that NFL. You hate. I don't love the NFL. I don't hate it. I mean, I don't love football, but I don't hate it either. Like, I'll watch it if it's on, and I'll watch it
all. Every Saturday and Sunday, you troll your Twitter timeline.
Oh, I do, because it's so funny.
People who watch football.
Yeah, but that's funny, dude. Like, that's a pastime. Like, I love doing that. Well, because the Dolphins made me not care. Like, I know that they're not good, so I don't care.
Yeah, they sucked your soul out. I can identify with that. I mean, I don't really – it's hard for me to care whether they win or lose at this point until you start to see some upward progress.
Leif, if I thought that the Dolphins were good, and if they – like, you know, and if I legitimately believe that they're good, and then they've won a couple games, and then they lose a really bad – they lose really badly – That would upset me, and I would understand. But like this thing that we do with the fan base, that you know the team's not going to be good, but you trick yourself into thinking they're going to be better than they are, and then they fall on their face, and then everybody acts surprised. It's like, come on, we have to know better than that.
The thing is the NFL was designed like that, where there's always that one team that's going to pop up and be the last wild card spot, and so one year it's Carolina
team.
The thing is, you don't know. Like, what you think, like 1 year is Carolina when they just went for it on like fourth down the entire time, and they made the playoffs. And next thing you know, like it just like Kansas City was it for 1 year. They went from 1-15. The Dolphins were that one team actually, 1-15 to 11-5. And then Kansas City did when they had the first pick, and they went to 11-5 the next year as well. So like, it's just all about like, hey, are we gonna get lucky this year and stumble into this?
I guess that's the thing. Parity lends it. Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Parody lends itself to hope trafficking. So that's just what happens every year with the NFL.
And I think as an NBA fan, you kind of know. I mean, you may not know exactly what your team's going to be, but you have a pretty good idea, right? So, like, we know that the Heat aren't contending, and if they make the playoffs, that's gravy. But, like, we kind of know what they are.
The NBA season is just – I think it's just wrapped differently. Like, you get to in a sense of – with the NFL – It's hope trafficking, and then you kind of realize, holy crap, yeah, never mind. But with the NBA, like, you're just like, all right, you know, we got to worry about two or three guys that we want to see play well. Whether, you know, compared to the NFL, where you have 11 guys on the field, and so it's hard to keep up with all of it. While it's your Heat, you're like, all right, is Justice Winslow going to play well? Josh Richardson, Tyler Johnson, Hassan. That's all we, you know.
What about that is what I think is that the NBA lends itself better to player stories, right? Because in the NFL, how many stories can, you know, unless they have to be special like Josh Norman to provide you with a I really care about this player because he's so different and special. Well, the NBA, because you see their faces and there's only five guys on the court, it lends itself to the Tyler Johnson story or the Josh Richardson coming out of nowhere story. Like, I don't think in football that's as prevalent because the ones who control the game are mainly quarterbacks. So it's like you kind of limit your storylines to a few players, and the NBA does a better job of letting the fan base connect with faces.
Spoon is rolling in his grave right now.
Oh, yeah, oh, Matt.
QB world.
You just went there.
But that's what it's marketed. Like, it's not – I mean, the quarterback's not responsible for everything, but that's how it's marketed.
Well, the NBA does a better job of kind of marketing superstars, whereas the NFL is all about branding and each team. And, like, you know, you got Steelers fans that will travel to each road game and stuff like that. So it's more like you root for the team, and that's what they're going to push. Whereas in the NBA, not every team can be good. You're going to have a whole bunch of 30-win and 40-win groups. So at that point, you are going to push those superstar names and get fans excited about coming to see Hassan Whiteside, even if you only win 36 games.
Well, I think also basketball, for the most part, can be more fun when your team is losing than football. Because a lot of time losing football looks really dreadful, and sometimes losing basketball doesn't look as dreadful as we're seeing with the Heat and even the Sixers last year. I mean, that was not you know, you could watch worse things than that, those Sixer teams. You know what I mean?
I get what you're saying, kind of. basically, if you're a bad football team,
it's terrible to watch.
It starts in the trenches, and you're not getting anything done on offense. So, I mean, there's not really any potential for much, like,
entertainment value,
fun things to happen. But if you're a bad basketball team, you're still going to get some, like, awesome plays because all of those guys are talented enough. And there's only five of them, so there's not as much. When you have 11 guys out there, you're relying on each one of those 11 guys to do their job. And if you're not a good team, just the potential for things to break down and just go ugly, I think are way greater when you have that large of a team.
Would you say, though, the example would be when Hassan first played for the Heat and he had that triple-double against the Bulls? So you have like that. You have that one moment where like, oh, wow, triple-double on national television? Like, this is awesome. And, you know, and you kind of get to celebrate that and enjoy it maybe into the next game, and it carries over for two or three games.
But you see his face the whole time. Like, something that I think is particular about this league is you see expression on guys' faces. Like, what we talked about to kind of bring us full circle, we talked about in the beginning of the show, Hassan looking visibly frustrated when Boogie's doing that stuff. You cannot see that under a helmet and a face mask. You know, like, you see the joy, the jubilance when guys are frustrated. You see it in their face when Kawhi Leonard misses the free throw against the Heat in the finals. You see that deer in headlights look. Like, you experience this journey in a very kind of intimate way because you see expression that you're not getting in the other sport.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's certain moments where you're
like, come on, Gawker, you got to let the silence sit. You have to make me feel awkward for saying that and then just let it.
Okay, okay. Keep going.
No, it's over. It's over.
No.
Okay.
I actually kind of had a thought on that with the.
You made a good point, actually.
No, I thought that was a great point. I think, like, just the way we talk about the NBA in comparison to the NFL is just, even historically, where when we talk about, like, a Wilt or an MJ or a Larry Bird or something, so much of that talking goes beyond, like, we talk about MJ and how great of a player he was, but primarily we talk about, like, his mentality, his fierceness, the trash talking. Same goes for Larry Bird. It's a much more personal league in the way that we talk about our players. If that makes sense.
No, because, and I think basketball is a more expressive sport than football in a way of LeBron, the way LeBron's game is, he's this physical freak that distributes, that gets everybody involved, that kind of speaks to the persona he gives off, right? Like, these guys, Dion Waiters, or Chalmers, or Dion Waiters, they have, like, this flashy, overconfident game style that reflects who they are as people. You know what I mean? Like, these kinds of things, their play is demonstrative of who they are in a way. So you kind of get to know them in a way that maybe you wouldn't other players, because you're kind of slave to route running and play calls and stuff like that. Thank you for thank you for your contributions.
With the McDonald's app, you can get your favorite thing delivered to your door. So if you were looking for a reason to skip washing those dishes you left in the sink, consider this a sign. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Right now, get $0 delivery fee with any purchase of $15 or more, only in the app. At participating McDonald's, minimum purchase excludes tax and service fees. Delivery prices may be higher than in restaurants. Other fees may apply, not valid with any other offer, discount, or coupon.